Bulletin Board. Our main speaker tonight is Richard.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. My name is Richard. I'm an alcoholic. And, wow, what a crowd. Let me just tell you, I first came to AA. Well, first, let me tell you, my sobriety date is March 18th, 1986. Means I've been sober for 23 and a half years as of mid-September. And I'm really happy to be here with my sponsor tonight, who's been my sponsor for 21 and a quarter of those years, the best years of that sobriety. My first few years were not happy years. But anyway, I was thinking as I was sitting here, you know, I drank and worked in Midtown Manhattan through the worst part of my alcoholism, and I was thinking there must be people in these rooms, in this room that I owe amends to that I don't remember. So if you're here, come up and tell me afterwards. I first came to AA in 1982. It was the first Friday of June, 1982. I had been drinking at that point for 20 years. About 6 months prior to that, talking with my shrink, I talked a little bit about my drinking. Actually, what it was I ran into my shrink at a bar when I was out drinking, and it got me so upset and depressed to see my shrink out at a bar that I drank into another blackout, which I drank into many of. So I was telling him about this next week or week or two later, and he said, are you concerned about your drinking? And I couldn't say yes, I couldn't say no. I said, well, you know, AA's not for me. I'm a gay guy, and I thought, no, AA's not for me. They wouldn't want me in AA. And he told me, well, they have gay meetings in AA. And so that stuck with me. And I vowed if I had another blackout, I'd come back. You know, I'd try AA, I'd come here. And I had vowed not to have blackouts at that point in my life, you know, I don't know how many times. So here's what happened. I came down with hepatitis. I had a very lenient doctor who told me I shouldn't drink for about 3 months. I went to the doctor. He told me, I think you have hepatitis. Let's take a test and we'll find out. And if you do, you won't be able to drink for about 3 months. So that night, knowing full well I probably had hepatitis, I went out and drank into a blackout. Well, not into a blackout, but I went out and drank very, very heavily. And then I found out knowing that I would be told I couldn't drink for 3 months. So right off the bat, that's a pretty good symptom of alcoholism. But I didn't see it that way. And anyway, I didn't drink for 3 months. I thought, well, that proves I can't be an alcoholic. I didn't drink for 3 months. Nothing happened. probably within a few weeks of resuming drinking, I was drinking pretty much the way I had before. And then I did have the blackout that I couldn't sweep under the rug, and that's why I first came to AA that Friday in June 1982. And I wish I could tell you I got sober then, but I didn't. I went to a meeting. I called up Intergroup that Friday morning, had a terrible hangover. I'd blacked out the night before. My blackouts weren't very dramatic. They were like, you know, it would be 8 o'clock, and the next thing would be 4 in the morning. And I would be in a different bar, and you know, I would be with people I didn't know, or that sort of thing. Anyway, I woke up, I called Intergroup, and I said in this kind of little boy's voice, "Is there a gay meeting I can go to?" And they sent me down to a group in the Village, and that's where I went to my first meeting Friday night that day in June. And I went to meetings for about 2 months. Didn't drink the whole time, but I just couldn't believe that I was an alcoholic. I just couldn't believe it. I thought I was too sophisticated. I thought I just drank wine at meals. I thought, how could anybody who goes to California and ships back cases of fine wine be an alcoholic? Alcoholics are like, you know, Jack Lemmon and Days of Wine and Roses, that sort of thing. So I... I couldn't believe I was a drunk. And when I left the meetings I went to for those 2 months, all I could see was people sitting out. It was the summer, sitting out sidewalk cafes with glasses of wine and cold bottles of beer. And I think, I can't stop drinking this. What am I thinking? This is crazy. And so I went back drinking the end of July. But the seed was planted because at the same time I sat here, I mean, the meetings I went to were nowhere near as, you know, lovely as this. They were, you know, those little shabby church basements. I think most of us probably first came into a few people in a room, the steps and traditions on a tattered shade behind you, that sort of thing. And but there was something in these rooms that I couldn't ignore. I saw people relating to one another in a way I'd never related with people in bars or in my regular social life or on the job. So it stuck with me. Those images of what went on in these rooms stuck with me while I went back. Well, my way back to drinking was to run a drinking test on myself. I didn't trust AA literature. It was too amateurish. So I went out to bookstores while I was going to these meetings, and I looked up books on alcoholism from, quote, professionals. And one book had a theory that an alcoholic couldn't drink a little bit every day for a month and not lose control of their drinking. Another one said an alcoholic couldn't restrict what they drink for 6 months without going beyond it. So I decided to drink every day a little bit for 6 months to prove I was an alcoholic by both tests. And I settled on 2 glasses of wine because I thought that's all I really want to drink is wine. It was difficult to figure out how to measure it, so I said, well, 2 large glasses is a half a bottle of wine. So I settled on a half a bottle of wine for 6 months to prove I wasn't an alcoholic. And for the next 6 months, I drove myself nuts, making sure that every day I got the full 2 glasses, which was pretty hard to do if you go out to dinner with 3 people and share 4 bottles of wine or something. I mean, the computations I had to go through on some days were enormous. And I know I cheated on the high end probably several times. But basically, I stuck to, maybe I might have gone to 3 one day or 2, but you know, I said, no, even if I did, big deal. I went for 6 months without getting drunk. I didn't go, you know, I couldn't, you know, I'm not an alcoholic. And I think I was about 4 years sober before I sat down and figured out, you know, 6 months is 180 days. A half a bottle a day is 90 bottles of wine. I drank 90 bottles of wine to prove I wasn't an alcoholic. I mean, that is so stupid, but I'll bet it makes sense to you, too. I mean, 2 glasses of wine is nothing, nada. I mean, anyway, I went back to drinking. And by the way, I was sharing this. I mean, my shrink at the time, God bless him, obviously had learned something about AA that he sent me here to start with. But at the same time, he had a lot of screwed up ideas about Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, he was the one who told me, well, if you don't want to go to a meeting every day, don't go. And then when I started saying how upset I was that I couldn't drink the rest of my life, he'd start telling me about somebody he knew was sober for 12 years who was now resuming drinking. So I was getting, like, really, you know, weird messages from him about what goes on in AA. But all the way through the test, I was telling him I'm doing this, and he was encouraging me. And I thought, this is great. The professional is supporting what I'm doing. I did what these 2, you know, professional books told me to do and passed the test. I'm not an alcoholic. And probably, I'm sure it was in less than a year, I was drinking exactly the way I drank before. But I, you know, denial, that same way at work, that I didn't see 2 glasses of wine every day for 180 days was 90 bottles. That same kind of denial, you know, just gradually would make an excuse for this. Well, that night that I got a little bombed was because, you know, I had some other substance at the bar that people were passing around, stuff like that. The bottom line is, within a year, I was drinking the way I had. And You know, I wasn't a fancy wine drinker. I mean, I drank wine with meals. Don't get me wrong. I loved it. I shipped cases back to New York. I got all my friends to chip in on cases. I would ship 3, 4, 5 cases back from Napa and Sonoma counties. I loved going out there and doing the research. I had to sample all the wines before I could, you know, pick the bottles that were the best ones to send back. So I had to drink like twice as much as everybody else. But anyway, my drinking really was bar drinking. I'd been drinking in bars since, you know, I turned 21. Thank you. And and my drinking was heavy in bars. I mean, when I was in a bar, I drank continuously. My drink of choice, I was introduced to it under the name of a Rusty Nail. It's a scotch mixed with Drambuie. My sister and I were at a party. I could blame my sister for my drinking because she introduced me to scotch. She drank Cutty Sark. I can still see that ship on the label. And we were at a party, and we were introduced to Rusty Nails. To Kilt Lifters, they were called, by her friend. And then I learned out they were called Rusty Nails and that you get them in a bar. And that was back in 1966. That was my staple drink for the next 20 years, Rusty Nails. And I would drink one after the other after the other. I'm sure in a normal night out at the bars, which would be 4 to 6 hours, I probably would have 10, 15 of those things. And I could hold it like a lot of us can do. We can hold our liquor. And I'd get by drinking that. I wouldn't fall down drunk. I wouldn't slur my speech. I would, you know, I remember I was standing at a bar one night ordering my umpteenth Rusty Nail. The bartender leans across and thumps me in the chest with a palm of his hand, and I didn't budge. And he said, "Wow." He said, so he made me another drink. About 10 minutes later, I was in a blackout with some guy in his apartment going out of the door to smell my shoe. So, you know, I could go right from seeming perfectly fine into a blackout. That's what the end of my drinking was like. And it was unpredictable. And so that's what I walked back into, that kind of drinking. I should say I came from a very small town back in North Dakota. I moved here in 1966. My father was the school superintendent in a little tiny town. So it was like you were the preacher's son to have your father in that job. And I had this paranoid feeling that something bad was going to happen to me any minute, because a lot of bad things did happen to me as the superintendent's son, or lots of threats that bad things would happen to me. So when I started having those blackouts, they really terrified me because I was unprepared for what might come my way. And actually, after I got sober, I realized they were a gift from God, those blackouts, because I ignored every other symptom of alcoholism in my life, like the 90 bottles of wine I drank in 180 days. But the blackouts got my attention. So I resumed drinking, and I had the blackouts. They all came back. By 1985, I was falling down drunk. I had damaged my knee. I had to have surgery. I couldn't stay sober long enough to get the surgery done. So I came back to AA because I remembered I didn't drink those 2 months I came here. And had the surgery done, came back to AA on crutches, sat in meetings, not big, you know, grand meetings like this, but some nice meetings in the back of the room. I would come just when the meeting start. I'd leave right when it was over. I would never count my days. Wouldn't talk to anybody. I had that invisible "don't tread on me" label on my chest. People, you know, observed it. And I was miserable. That was probably the worst part of my pre-sobriety, was to be not drinking and denying myself the opportunity to get better and seeing other people around me getting better. God took pity on me. After I went out drinking 2 times, and in March of 1986, I came back into a meeting I'd been going to for a while and ran smack dab into a guy I knew from group therapy, who he and I used to go out drinking together after group therapy. Right, I had seen him in meetings before that. He was counting days. He was a pink cloud baby, you know, smiling and happy. You know, he really annoyed me. I'd see him at meetings and like leave, because I didn't want him to see that I was around. I ran right into this guy, big gregarious guy, throws his arms around me. Oh, I'm so glad to see you. We sit down, we talk over coffee. I think I laughed maybe for the first time in months sitting there with him. Went and sat in the meeting with him. And when it came time to count days, like you all did here tonight, which was beautiful to see so many new people, so many young people getting sober, I raised my hand and I said, my name is Richard, I'm an alcoholic. And the way I look at that is I finally took the first step. 4 years, almost four full years after my first AA meeting, I fought admitting I was an alcoholic all that time. Now, I wish I could tell you that I heard a choir of angels off stage saying, welcome, Richard, welcome home, welcome home. I felt like an idiot. As I said, I was not a happy camper during my early sobriety. I had a long black cloud. People tried to cheer me up. I bit their head off. I remember one guy saying, why don't you try going to a movie or something to cheer up? And I said, what good are going to a movie for? I still can't drink. Alcohol for me was like my lover, my best friend, my constant companion. I mean, it was something I thought about all the time. And it really annoyed me that I couldn't drink. I'll flash forward to 9 months sober. I'm still pretty miserable. I counted days at my home group, which is the Ninth Avenue group in Chelsea. And they have every year a holiday party. I went to it in December. To help people get through Christmas and New Year's. So I went to this holiday party, and I see all these people that I counted days with, happy, they're wearing little Santa's outfits and elf hats, and they're making coffee, and they're greeting people at the door, and I come slumping in, you know, in my black cloud, and and I'm saying, huh, why are all these people having so much fun, and I'm not? And it's like I had in my mind that I didn't get the invitation for happiness that everyone else got. It got, you know, it didn't come in the mail. I don't, you know. And I'm sitting there, like, feeling sorry for myself, and I have to say it was a moment of grace. The thought came to me, well, Richard, you don't feel you belong because you've never joined. That's that simple. If you want to join, you have to show up and do something. I mean, it was just crystal clear to me, and I vowed to start going, God forbid, to business meetings, and we have a regular anniversary, group anniversary party in the spring, and I volunteered to be the coat check chairperson. That was my first service job in AA, and I hid in the coat check room all through that party, but I did service, and people knew I was there, and I felt at the beginning of starting to feel like I belonged. And I've done service ever since. I'm now pleased to say that all these years later, I serve as your delegate to the General Service Conference. It's my first year doing that service. And when I think about what I was like when I got here, how defiant and grandiose I was, and at the same time how negative and self-hating I was, that all these years later I've gotten to a point where this kind of service, doing all the service I've done leading to this kind of service, how it makes me feel the power of this fellowship, of the spiritual transformation that we go through doing these steps, how true that is, how deep it goes. I mean, it's a miracle. Anyway, I started doing service. I got involved in doing GSR work. I did work for Intergroup, and began to do service on the general service level. And for the last 15 years, that's been a big part of my life. And for me, service is what obliges me to show up. I mean, I'm still an alcoholic. I always will be one. Someone at the meeting I went to last night was saying, I don't have all the answers. Well, none of us have all the answers. If you ever start thinking you have all the answers, I suggest you go share about that at a meeting. Because, you know, I'm 23 and a half years sober. I don't have all the answers. My sponsor is 40 years sober. I know he doesn't have all the answers. He's got a lot of them, but none of us do. I mean, we need to come here, and we need to share what we all we have to share, which is our experience, strength, and hope. And that's how we stay sober. So I need to show up, and service got me to show up. If I had to chair a meeting, I'd show up for it. If I was the secretary for the meeting, I'd show up. If I did coffee, I would show up for that. I would obsess on the cookies. I would obsess on getting the coffee ready in time. I would, you know, get resentful because people didn't clean up after themselves or whatever, but I would show up and I would do it. And I'd almost invariably feel better afterwards. So service to me is, you know, that one of those three legacies, you know, recovery, unity, recovery, and service. Service was a really important part of that, my continuing sobriety. Let me just say a few things about what it's been like being sober. I was thinking as I was sitting here, you know, AA has brought so much to me. And one of the things it brought to me was in 2001, we all know the tragedy that befell our city. And I was doing CPC work for the area at the time. I got a call from the General Service Office saying the Red Cross had gotten in touch with them, asking if there was some way AA meetings could be brought down to the workers at Ground Zero. And since I was the CPC chair, they got in touch with me to ask me about that. I got in touch with a friend I know, Dorothy D. Maybe some of you know her from the 79th Street Workshop, who was involved with institutions work at Intergroup. And the two of us worked together with the Red Cross and got a group of volunteers to show up. And eventually we had two meeting rooms down there where we brought meetings for the next several months to the workers down there who were unable pretty much to get away from where they were to get to a meeting. And there were a number of recovering alcoholics down there. That was really powerful, just to do the service for these men, but on this, you know, look at it from the self-centered point of view that probably most of us look at things in life. For me, it helped me get through that awful experience that other people I knew were emotionally, you know, wrecked for the months afterwards. I was doing something. I had that something to burn off the feelings that that brought for me, for all of us, and carry the message. And one other thing I want to talk about is the next year I was diagnosed with a heart condition and had to have two stents implanted. And I thought it was curtains for me. Many members of my family have died from heart disease. And I hit the skids. All I could think of was, you know, maybe it'd be better if I didn't have the work done and I just let myself die. That's where my alcoholism will take me. That's where that thinking will take me. And what happened to me was the executive editor of the Grapevine, I was on the editorial advisory board for the Grapevine at the time, was interested in putting a book together of articles on spiritual, how people develop the spiritual side of themselves in recovery, and asked me if I'd be willing to edit the book. So here I was suffering this, you know, crisis of do I want to live kind of thing, and I had to sit and read hundreds of articles on people's spiritual experiences in AA, and it was the most therapeutic thing I ever did. That book has been available now for a number of years. It's called Spiritual Awakenings. It's a terrific book, I think, and the writers in AA who share so freely about their experience are amazing people. It's also available on CD, and it's a wonderful message of that part. We've called that part of recovery. To me, it's the whole of recovery is the spiritual transformation that takes place here, which is not religious. It's what I talked about earlier, that miracle that I can feel down to my toes when I'm doing something in AA, that I just know this is the right thing for me to be doing. So many other things I'm not sure about that. I go into the voting booth and vote for somebody. I'm not sure I'm doing the right thing. I didn't go into the voting booth today and vote for anybody, and I'm sure I didn't do the right thing. But I come and do AA service. That sense of all's right with the world really is there with me, and I'm grateful for that feeling, because I never had that feeling when I drank. I always felt like I didn't belong. I was separate from everybody else. Poor me. Everyone else is part of the party, and I'm left outside, you know, looking at the crumbs from the table and that kind of thing. And I don't feel that way anymore. So I just want to say to all you new people, Stick with this. I mean, you're going to have some bad days. You're going to have some good days. You know, you'll eventually learn how to live sobriety and get old like me. I just turned 65. But I tell you, I am happier being 65 than I was 35 when I was drinking. I thought of suicide the whole last 4 or 5 years of my drinking was a daily thought. I don't think that way anymore. And when I do, I go to a meeting and I hear the message from you all, and I know life is worth living. Life is more than worth living. Life is worth celebrating. And celebrated in AA, and next year is our 75th anniversary in San Antonio. I think it's going to be quite a celebration. So I hope you all can make that, but if you can't, don't drink and go to meetings. Thank you.